Henry V has just opened at the Globe in English. This is by way of a transitional production, touring, opening the new season here, but also concluding the multi-language globe-to-globe season, staged as part of the World Shakespeare Festival 2012 in the year of the London Olympics. We've had all Shakespeare's plays, including A Charming Midsummer Night's Dream in Korean, A Timon of Athens in German, more light-hearted than usual perhaps, politically minded productions of Macbeth in Polish, Lear in Belarusian and Hamlet in Lithuanian. There was a spectacular Haka as part of the Maori Troilus and Cressida, and a joyful Taming of the Shrew in Urdu. British Sign Language and hip-hop have been represented, and the world's newest country, South Sudan, gave us Cymbeline, specially translated into Juba Arabic for the occasion. There's been some controversy, as might be expected in such an ambitious undertaking, notably when the Habima company from Israel performed The Merchant of Venice, despite protests from some pro-Palestinian groups. My name's Heather Neal, and I'm joined now at Shakespeare's Globe by Tom Bird, producer of Globe to Globe, to sum up the season for Theatre Voice. Well, this was an enormous undertaking. When did you begin, and how on earth did you recruit the various companies? How did you go about it? I know it was over a year ago because I was talking to Dominic about something else in May last year and he was already dashing about the world.
We began programming the festival proper at the end of, very end of 2010, beginning of 2011. We always knew we wanted to go on sale quite early with the festival, so we went on sale eventually in October 2011. So it was a very, very quick kind of 10-month period when we programmed everything. Once we got the money through from the Olympics, really, it's part-funded by the Olympics, the whole project, and we couldn't go till that money came through, really.
How much was that, can you say?
I'm not allowed.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, sadly not. I signed a contract saying I'm not allowed. How did we find the groups? Well, in all sorts of different ways is the answer. We hosted a funny breakfast here towards the end of 2010 when we invited cultural attachés from all the different embassies to come and have breakfast with us and tell us about the groups in their own countries that were doing Shakespeare and sort of who's hot and who's not. Some cultural attachés are very on the button and some aren't. We talked to a lot of other theatre makers, you know, who'd worked abroad or were au fait with work in different parts of the world. We talked to journalists who, in each territory, we had some friends already. You know, the Maori Troilus and Cressida really was the baby of Rauwiri Paratene, who played Friar Lawrence in our Romeo and Juliet.
Oh yes,
in
I remember him. Yeah.
And he came back and played Pandarus in Troilus and Cressida. So huge variety of different ways. And then, of course, by travelling around, you know, was the other way, is showing up in various cities all over the world and watching as much Shakespeare as we could over a very short period of time, which is obviously great fun as a thing to do. You know, there's a repertoire system in a lot of Europe which makes the whole business a bit easier, in that particularly in Russia and Eastern Europe and Central Europe, they'll have 20 shows in their repertoire, of which invariably two or three are Shakespeare plays. And you can just see, okay, they've got this and this and this, let's watch them. And it's not really always a case of what's the best show generally, but more a case of what might fit in the Globe and what might work within this sort of very idiosyncratic theatre.
So some of them were productions already there. Some of them, though, were specifically designed for this season, weren't they?
Yeah, most were specifically designed for this season. About 9 or 10 of the shows existed already, including Hamlet and the Titus Andronicus from Hong Kong and the Midsummer Night's Dream from Korea, a few others. And then a lot more were the product of conversations between us and companies. We couldn't really be a full commissioning partner on, you know, over 25 shows, but it was more a case of seeing if there was a Shakespeare play that group had been thinking about for a while and then asking about whether they want to do it at the festival and put it into their own repertoire. back home.
But then you had to assign plays, and it would be just tough luck if two companies wanted to do Macbeth, for instance.
Exactly. So obviously that happened a lot, you know, that...
Yes, managing to get all the Henry Sixes done, for instance, that must have been a bit difficult.
Do you know, it surprisingly wasn't that difficult, in that once we floated the idea of this Balkan trilogy with the national theatres of Serbia, Albania and Macedonia, they liked the idea very, very quickly. And I love the idea of me desperately trying to persuade them, you know, over some hideous spirits in a bar in Macedonia. But it was never quite like that. It was always met with quite a lot of enthusiasm. You know, people want to come here, you know. And those plays, they felt resonated with their own experience. And, you know, they wanted to use those plays to tell some kind of story related to their own national experience, I suppose. Others didn't at all, you know. The way that other countries reacted couldn't have varied more. The Palestinians felt that Richard II could help them tell a story they wanted to tell. But the Afghans, for example, didn't want to take on one of the sort of bloody history plays or a tragedy, as you might expect. You know, they were very keen to do something completely different and go with Shakespeare's arguably lightest, shortest play, The Comedy of Errors. So there's no kind of set rules as to how people would react. The one other thing is that it's very surprising that different plays are popular in different places. You know, it's not simply the case that it's always Romeo and Juliet, or it's always Hamlet, or it's always the Scottish play. It's, you know, King John is very popular in Armenia. Most of the company that came and performed King John had been in King John before. That would never happen here.
No.
And there is a few other examples of that, that different plays become popular in different places.
Yeah. Well, it was clear that some companies had chosen or were glad to be asked to do certain plays because they resonated with their politics. The Measure for Measure made complete sense to me when someone said Putin, you know, because we had Angelo and the Duke played by the same actor.
Exactly.
And of course, Putin was behind the scenes when he wasn't officially in charge, and then he came back again. That was so clever. Of course, it did make the end of the play a bit difficult.
Yeah,
it sort of disappeared, really. And then the Belarusian King Lear as well. That's right.
I mean, it was great, I think, in the Belarusian Lear to see tyranny and autocracy and despotism done by people who really know about tyranny and despotism. You know, it's all very well.
Yes, because this is a very brave company, isn't it?
It's a very brave company. It's all very well, and we all do this, and we should continue to do this, and we must continue to do King Lear, and our best actors must continue to do King Lear. But it's all very well, you know, coming down from Hampstead and doing a Lear, and understanding that that kind of when kind of that absolute kind of monarchy, you know, understanding the mechanics of absolute monarchy and how he feels when that's not working for him anymore. But really, to have a group from Belarus where there is still a totalitarian president in place who plays ice hockey on his own in the middle of the night, in his own ice hockey rink, and scores lots of goals himself, you know, it did bring the place so much, you know, such a different perspective. It's a cliche in a way, but it really did shine such a new light on that play. So we were delighted to be able to do that kind of thing. You know, this theatre has always been about finding new aspects in the play. Since it opened in 97, you know, it's always been a place where aspects of the place that haven't come to light in the past have come to light.
Yes, absolutely.
Normally because of the architecture. But in this case, it was often because of the group that we'd asked to do it and what they might bring to that play.
Well, what do you think? Which ones do you think worked? I mean, obviously, people had to think of the shape of this theatre, and most of them wouldn't have worked in anything like it before.
No, exactly.
And they didn't get much chance to get to know it because things were changing so fast. People were only in there for a couple of days, weren't they?
No, yeah, and they only had a morning to rehearse on stage, you know, so it was a morning rehearsal in the actual space and then go with a matinee. Yeah. And no space in the theatre between the matinee and the evening performance. So you really just had to get it right or not get it right.
Yeah.
And the vast majority of people did, which was extraordinary to us.
Were you keeping an eye on things developing? Were you able to do that? You can't be all over the world all the time, so...
No, I mean, and also you have to be really careful about being domineering and sort of, you know, you have to be so careful about... You know, we think of ourselves as Brits, but, you know, the rest of the world thinks of us as Brits and, you know, for a long time, colonial aggressors.
Yes. I mean,
you have to be you have to be really careful about saying, this is how we do it, so you must do it like this. You know, it's a very dangerous road to go down, not least because it's an odd and aggressive thing to do, but also because you don't want homogeneity in a festival like this. You want variety at all costs. You have to have variety. You have to have two actors from Zimbabwe doing a sort of slapstick Two Gentlemen of Verona and the National Theatre of China, with, you know, zillions of actors and everything in between. It's really important to get that variety. And so we said to people, as a sort of principle, look, here's the Globe. Here are the limitations that the Globe has, as far as you're concerned, in terms of technical, what you can do technically. And it might rain, and the audience...
And
the
it did, didn't it?
It did it rain did a lot. But what we want, as far as you can do that, is the show that you would do if you decided to put on Richard III in China anyway. Do you know what I mean? So it should be a show almost for Beijing rather than for the Globe. And that's the show that we want to see here.
Yes. It was a bit odd having piped music sometimes. And I Will Survive in two different productions.
Yeah. Completely bizarre.
Who would have guessed that?
Yeah.
In Macbeth and Timon of
Athens.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. There were
The thing with music is obviously we use acoustic music here normally.
Yes, and the Urdu company playing the shrews seemed to be just part of that tradition straight away.
Yeah. Exactly. And we've more recently been experimenting a little bit in shows like The Frontline that we did in 2008 and 2009 with a bit of amped guitar, and in God of Soho in 2010 or 2011. 2011, we did the same thing. And it's not really enough to say that electric music doesn't work in the Globe, because I think during the festival there were a couple of instances at least where it did start to work very, very well. I think in As You Like It, the Georgian show, it worked very, very successfully. But I think it's odd for the normal Globe audience who are used to that, and sometimes it felt very, very present. But of course, in the hip-hop Othello, it's something you have to do. It's very much part of that tradition. So, yeah, it was very, very experimental, the whole thing. But I think musically it was very interesting.
Yeah. Well, each production was only on two and sometimes three times, is that right?
Yeah.
So were they all filmed? I mean, is there an archive? Will it be possible in the future for people to study these?
They were all filmed. They were all filmed on four high-definition cameras. So we've got a wonderful archive that we're delighted with. And they look gorgeous. Yes, is the answer. You know, I'm not quite sure. They'll be in the archive here, of course. And, you know, we hope that people will come and look at these films for quite a few years to come. It's a real once-in-a-lifetime experience.
Yeah. So. Well, you mentioned the usual Globe audience then, but, of course, a lot of the people who came were not the usual Globe audience. So I think you know how many people came for the first time, don't you?
Well over 80% is the answer. It's getting up to sort of 83, 84% of people who came to the festival who had never been to the Globe before, which is extraordinary and very, very exciting. It means that over four in every five people hadn't been here before. What that was is a varied linguistic and cultural communities from around London coming to see in inverted commas, their own show.
Yeah. Presumably some of the Eastern Europeans could have followed several of the languages, couldn't they? I mean, a lot of them have Russian as a second language.
As a second language. And that goes for quite a few things. A lot of Indians who speak Gujarati would also speak Hindi. Mm. A lot more and more Chinese Cantonese speakers would get Mandarin, I think. A lot of Spanish speakers get Portuguese, and so on. Mm. But on the whole, we had these extraordinary afternoons and evenings where, you know, you would have the whole of Tower Hamlets here for The Tempest in Bangla. Mm. And it was just a fantastic night. And no one else is doing that, you know. Mm. No one else is engaging enough with these communities. And it was lovely for the Globe to do it. And we hope, you know, desperately hope that those people come back and see something, The Tame and the Shrew, or Richard III this summer. We desperately hope that'll happen.
Yeah. Well, some people managed to come to everything, didn't they?
They did.
How many people did that?
117 people stood for every single one, which is a Herculean feat.
That's
on
amazing.
The legs. And nearly 50 people sat for everything. Mm. We put in various discounts for the tickets, you know, to encourage people to do that. But it was quite extraordinary, the sort of line around the front of the stage of the groundlings who were doing every single thing, and the community that they had amongst themselves, and the goodwill they brought to their show. You know, we're totally defined and reliant upon our audience here. You know, there's not Arts Council funding to influence what we do. There's not any government interference. There's, you know, there's not a huge amount apart from the audience that tells us what to do. And so I was delighted to see that Globe audience, that part of the Globe audience, really embracing what we were doing.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I have to ask you the question, which some people might be wondering. If you take away Shakespeare's language and then people change the plot, have we still got any Shakespeare? On the other hand, is the way that people are liberated enough to make up for that? I mean, there are two ways of looking at it.
Of course, we did take away Shakespeare's language completely. There wasn't that much changing of the plot going on. There was a bit, but on the whole, people did the play, the story of the play, with the characters that are there. Often people change the setting, which I do kind of understand. Yeah. You know, a battle in Gloucestershire becomes a battle in the Punjab or whatever. Yeah. You know, that's fine. Yeah. And doesn't make much of a difference. There's so much Shakespeare still there, and I think he would have adored this. You know, it's like Shakespeare in English, even for us, is very difficult. You know, my dad doesn't watch Shakespeare because he doesn't get Shakespeare in English. And I don't think that's a strange situation. I think the vast majority of the population, as time goes on, don't understand Shakespeare in English. So, you know, as English speakers in 2012, if we go and watch a Shakespeare play, we have to do a translation job in our own heads. Unless we're an academic or a Shakespeare expert, where we have to go, okay, what's this person saying in their funny Jacobean English? And what does that mean in the way that I speak? If you say to yourself from the beginning, I'm not going to understand the language at all, you do different things as a theatre-goer, as an audience member. Dominic describes it as X-raying the play, which I think is quite a good way of putting it. You know, you think about why these characters are there in a very basic form. What are they wearing, and why are they wearing what they're wearing? Why are they moving on the stage in this way? Why is this music being used at this point? How are these people moving around the stage, and why are they moving around the stage like that? There's so many kind of dramaturgical elements that are in the plays anyway, no matter what language they're in. It's very, very, very interesting to, you know, to really find out what is the glue that's in the plays anyway between the words, if you see what I mean. It's kind of hard to describe, but I've adored watching Shakespeare plays in languages that I don't understand without surtitles. You know, And that must be because there's something else there apart from the words. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a structure, an architecture is maybe the best way of putting it, to each play that still comes out, and that maybe you actually notice more when the language is taken away, because you don't have to do that sort of quick, it's Shakespeare in English, you know, he's our national bard, I must translate this in my head and get wisdom out of it. Mm-hmm. You do a different thing.
Mm. Okay. And of course, he has been translated since his day.
Yeah, that's right. There's a German Romeo and Juliet in 1600 something, I think.
There was Hamlet in 1607. That was not translated at as early as that. It was translated by about 1620, though, I think.
Yeah.
Well, I've got to ask you about the big political upset here, or what threatened to be, and in fact, probably during the actual performance, it turned out to be okay. But you did have to have a lot of police and security around, and it was very worrying beforehand. Mm. Can you just go through what happened there? I mean, did you anticipate when you booked Habima to come from Israel that there was going to be a problem, or were you taken by surprise?
We thought there'd be controversy because of the play that they were doing.
Right, which was The Merchant of Venice.
Which turned out to be completely irrelevant in this country as an issue. Back home in Israel, they got in a lot of trouble for performing The Merchant of Venice, which a lot of people think of as an anti-Semitic play. And they were attacked from the Israeli right for doing that play. When we booked them, the problem is, you know, Habima is, if you're looking for a Hebrew language show in the world, you know, Habima gives you the best Hebrew language show, along with a couple of other theatres in Israel, the Camry and the Gesher. You know, it's a great tradition of theatre, and it's a great tradition of Shakespeare as well, in that country and in that language. So Habima is in no way an unorthodox choice theatrically. It's quite the opposite. It's a choice that is a natural choice to make for a programmer. You know, they work with the Schaubühne in Berlin, one of the most famous theatres in the world, and a number of other sort of international collaborators. In this country, there's a very strong movement for a cultural boycott of all sort of cultural exports, Israeli. And they got hold of us pretty early and said, you know, you shouldn't be bringing this group over. We didn't quite... we weren't aware of the heat that it would generate. And the sort of level of passion that it would generate when we booked it.
Was it because they had specifically played in the occupied territories? Was that the reason, or would that have been a problem anyway? Just bringing an Israeli company.
It's hypothetical. It's very hard to know. I think that, you know, the fact they play in the occupied territories didn't help at all. I get the feeling that there would probably have been a boycott movement anyway. They are supported by the government. The fact they're supported by the government in Israel means that they have to go and play in the occupied territories,
right?
As part of their existence. And they give their actors a choice about whether they want to go there or not. And the actors don't have to go there. And they have Arab actors in their company as well. And there was an Arab actor playing Bassanio in The Merchant. We had a group from Palestine as well, doing Richard II, Ashtar from Ramallah. What we felt was important in the whole thing, we came under a huge amount of pressure to cancel the performance, the Israeli performance. Pressure from people very close to us.
I know, yeah. And some very well-known names as well outside.
And there were other very well-known names, it has to be said.
You probably need to mention that Mark Rylance was one who signed against.
And other well-known names came out publicly and said we were doing the right thing. David Hare, Howard Brenton, and Howard Jacobson, who won the Booker Prize.
David Edgar?
I can't remember. But Mark and Emma Thompson and and
Maureen Lipman.
Others were against it. Yeah. You know, it was a debate in the press here. We feel that getting people together and some kind of exchange and some kind of conversation and inclusion is preferable to silencing and exclusion. And that was the principle. That was a principle that guided the whole festival, and that's one that stopped us feeling that it was right to cancel. Where do you stop if you start sort of, you know, it's difficult. It's a side of the argument you never expect to find yourself on. But the festival wasn't really about politics, and there were other groups in the festival that are sponsored by governments that do not have perfect human rights records. Absolutely. The National Theatre of China came here, and no one showed up.
No, that's
there wasn't a peep. No. And it's quite bizarre that it's that part of the world. The Americans were here, no one gave a peep. It's that part of the world that gives generates such heat, and it's very, very interesting that happens, and yet the Chinese show up, or the Americans show up, or other groups show up, the Russians show up, and there's just no bother at all.
Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? I don't know, but I'm very, very glad that we stuck by what we did, and I feel that we probably did the right thing.
Mm. Well, it's obviously been an extraordinary all-encompassing, all-enveloping sort of experience for everyone here, which will in itself be a legacy. Is there any other kind of legacy, do you think? Do you think there's been ideas that have come up about how to use that space? I mean,
I hope so. I think there might be a few legacies. There'll be sort of theatrical legacies and audience legacies, I think. I think for people who work in this space, they will have been inspired by a lot of different things that different companies did. I think that...
Yes, how many of them actually were able to see another company?
There were sort of four or five groups here at the same time. So there'll be a bit of cultural exchange going on. There's certainly a lot of globe practitioners who would have been influenced by the festival. There are young directors and young designers and young musicians and young actors in London who came to a lot of the shows and who I hope will have been influenced by the ways that people work. It's so important you have influence. You know, it seems such an obvious thing to us, but that you have international influence. London can be a real theatre bubble, and it can create theatre by London and for London and for its own little sort of world, and that is not sustainable. It's very important that theatre comes in. The countries where the theatre scene is worst around the world, is least successful around the world, are the countries where they don't let anyone else in. You know, that's and they don't invite other work. You know, it's really important to London that it continues to see international work. The Barbican can do a great job. The Riverside Studios do a bit. But it's kind of, you know...
The RSC are doing a bit.
RSC are doing a handful of, you know, a bit, really a bit. But there's not enough international work here at all. And so I hope that this festival will have influenced the practitioners themselves, but also the producers, to bring over more of this work. And then I very much hope that...
There's Lyft as well. We ought to mention Lyft, which has a huge...
Lyft, Lyft's wonderful. Yeah, should have mentioned Lyft. The other thing is with audiences, I hope that it leads to more programming with London's audiences in mind, London's different potential audiences in mind.
Yes.
It's now been demonstrated properly that there is an audience for Shakespeare in the Bangla community of Tower Hamlets and in the Polish community of West Hammersmith. So why not more? You know, I really hope that influence other programmers.
Yeah, I was talking to a couple of the stewards when I was just before I came to speak to you, and one of them had seen everything, and they'd had a conversation with you and Dominic and had discovered that some of these productions are actually going on as a result of having been here, they're now going to have another life in Europe.
Huge, or wherever. Huge amounts. The Balkan trilogy is going to tour, you know, the Balkan trilogy...
That's the Henry VI.
Henry VI trilogy is going to tour into Serbia and Albania and Macedonia, who are the participants. But it's also going to tour into Kosovo, which is an incredible thing for Serbians and Albanians to do together. Mm. It is going to tour into Croatia and Slovenia, who were part of the whole conflict, obviously, in the 90s. And that is a great legacy as well. And lots of the other shows, most of the other shows, will have a future life, which is delightful.
What about that Chinese Richard III? Was that done specially to come here?
It was, but it'll play. It's playing now in Beijing, and it'll play and play in Beijing, I hope.
Such a shame their costumes didn't arrive. I'd love to have seen their costumes.
Yeah, in a way, that was our biggest problem at the festival. And that's not a bad biggest problem to have.
No.
Yeah, their boat got stuck outside Felixstowe, and it couldn't dock because of the bad weather. We tried everything, and there was nothing we could do. Mm. But they brought us a wonderful show anyway.
Yes, and Globe provided some costume.
We did the lot. We propped and costumed the whole show in a day by tearing around Chinatown.
And I think before we finish, we ought to mention South Sudan, because that was quite extraordinary, because that was the first time Shakespeare had ever been translated there, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And this play, Cymbeline, of all plays to start with, was translated specially to bring it.
Yeah, that's right. They really felt that Cymbeline would allow them to tell a story that they wanted to tell about the weirdness of life under occupation, you know. Mm. Cymbeline's kind of a British story, but the Romans are hovering constantly in the background.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. There's some bizarre stage directions in Cymbeline, like the Roman army crosses the stage, which I love. Then I think it says the British army crosses the stage. It's great.
It was one person who spent, what, months doing the translation before you could start.
A wonderful, wonderful man in his late 70s called Joseph Abuk, who translated the whole thing and into a language that is not written down at all normally. It's a pidgin Arabic that's spoken on the streets, really, in Juba, you know, that city. It's a language of a city. Rather than the language of a nation, the official language of the new Republic of South Sudan is English. But that was an incredible, you know, one-off event. And it was a very, very special couple of performances. And they actually did themselves huge amounts of credit. It was great. You know, in bits, it was beautifully acted. It was full of verve and gusto and enthusiasm and...
Did you get an audience for that? Was that difficult to sell?
I think there was a sort of element to which people were just fascinated by the idea that you could bring Shakespeare from such an unlikely place. Yeah. The other thing I should say is their proposal. The proposal they sent us was a written proposal, and it was the best one we got out of the 38. It was over 20 pages long. It sort of outlined in detail why they should be here and what Shakespeare meant to them and how Shakespeare kept them going during the Civil War and really? By reading Shakespeare's plays out, you know, in the bush in English, that would take their minds off the killing that would happen in the morning. And, you know, incredible things to read and things that you can't say no to, and very, very inspiring. And then I was terrified that they would try and stay here, you know, that they wouldn't want to go home. And yet, in the end, all they wanted to do was go home because they thought it was too cold here, which is just brilliant.
True.
Yeah.
Well, is that? I've got to ask you if you have any favourites, or perhaps I shouldn't ask you that because it's difficult.
It's like having 37 children. Yeah. You know, you just don't want.
But you must have had some surprises, like the audience returning the haka, for instance. That was one night.
Incredible. And then some mind blowing productions that just came out of nowhere that we maybe didn't know were going to happen. You know,
yes, because some you perhaps didn't see at all until you saw them here.
So some were effectively commissions. You know, in that we had to say to people, you know, will you do King John, please? Mm. And they would say yes. And then that show particularly was I thought a wonderful version of a play that's not performed enough and is very hard to get right.
There are too many favourite moments to say. You know, I think the unlikely story is that the fact that a South Sudanese company can come here and do what they did, and an Afghan company could come here and do the Comedy of Errors with such kind of joy and hope.
Yeah.
That's really, really special moment. Another moment I'll never ever forget in all my life is standing in the foyer after Love's Labour's Lost, which was the first ever British sign language version of Shakespeare, and hearing almost nothing at all, but knowing that so many conversations were going on. And to applaud in sign language, instead of clapping your hands together, you move your hands to either side of your head. You kind of shake your hands on either side of your head. And the yard was just full of this kind of applause in sign language. And it was very, very quiet, but it looked extraordinary. And it was a great, great moment. And lovely to be able to do that kind of first, you know.
Yeah. The only thing I've got against the whole season is that there wasn't one in Welsh. And I told
there wasn't one in Welsh. Yeah. You know, it's difficult. It is difficult. And there were a lot of languages we missed out. Yeah. I was desperate to involve. You know, I'd love to have had something in Irish. I'd love to have had something in Welsh. We should have had something in Romanian. It's such a strong theatre scene, such a strong Shakespeare scene. From the point of view of London's languages, I would have liked to have something in Ghanaian. It would have been nice to have something in Dutch, given all the exchange between
well, you've got enough left to do another season.
Yeah, exactly. On Welsh, though, what we did on the Sunday before Globe to Globe is we had a lot of Shakespeare sonnets, and we had some of those spoken in Welsh, translated into Welsh.
Yes, you've had quite a number of Welsh-speaking actors here.
Yes. Yeah. And very excitingly, the Welsh Language National Theatre of Wales are about to do The Tempest in Welsh, in a tent, at the National, and I don't know how to pronounce the name,
Eisteddfod. On the mice. I'm Welsh.
Ah, okay. So that's about to happen, which is great, which I'm going to try and get to.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Oh, well, maybe I'll go this year. Well, thanks very much, Tom.
Thank you.
Thank you for a brilliant season.
Thanks very much.